And we're back with The Greatest Thing You Never Heard. My name's John. I am one of the two hosts of this fine podcast. Hashtag
Lies.
Hashtag Affable John. And with me, as always, is my slightly less humble co-host, Ben. Hashtag Humble Ben. How's it going?
How am I slightly less humble than what?
But just the lies thing. So it's just it didn't seem that humble for the moment.
Well, it's all good.
We'll see how it plays out.
It's whatever. We're off to an auspicious start, I would say.
Yeah. How are you? That's because I started it.
Note to self.
How am I? I'm doing well. A little frazzled. I've been overly busy recently, which is kind of good and kind of drives you crazy. So, you know, but how are you doing?
Yeah, actually about the same. I think my frazzled quotient is perhaps higher than usual.
Yeah.
Fine podcasting eve.
It's good because you don't have time to, you know, get too bummed out about anything because you're just so damn busy. But at the same time, you don't really get to relax either.
Yeah. Yeah. And speaking of not relaxing, we are on our 37th album, 37. And it's we're going back to death metal.
We are.
And actually, in your case, it's going to death metal because the only other time we did death metal was pre your era.
That's right. Yeah, you guys did the Grave album.
We did Grave and Soulless, great record.
Mm-hmm.
And now we've got another great record. This one from Arkansas.
That's right.
Band from Fayetteville, Arkansas, Vore.
Mm-hmm.
Their third and most recent album, Gravehammer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a brutal one.
Yeah. It's good, man. It's really good. I got to see these guys live. I got to see them at, it was May of 2012
mm-hmm.
at the, so buddy, they were touring, I guess, on this record.
Okay.
At the 19th hole in the northern part of Houston.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was possibly my first time at the 19th hole.
No, oh, right on. Who were they with? Yeah. Goat Horror?
No.
I'm trying to think I'm looking at some of the bands they toured with and trying to imagine who you would have if you went out to see them or
It's not a terrible guess. It's not a terrible guess because the band actually that I was there to see that night was Hod.
Oh, okay.
And they from Austin, and I had gotten to know and still do TA, their bass player, and he was real cool. So I met TA at South by Southwest in 2011,
mm-hmm.
and it was actually a show we discussed briefly. I think in the Life Beyond interview, it was the Metal Alliance tour.
Oh yeah,
and so it was like Saint Vitus, Helmet, Crowbar, Weed Eater. I think Red Fang was there. Just a whole bunch of stuff. And I was there in my doom metal jacket with all my patches. And back when I was still doing the patch jacket thing before I got too fat for my patch jacket. And there was another dude had a bunch of like old school metal patches, Coroner and kind of a bunch of thrash stuff. And I was like, oh, cool jacket, man. He goes, yeah, cool jacket. And we started chatting. It was TA and real, real nice guy. And so he was playing with Hod at 19th hole. So I went out to check it out. And yeah, the lineup was like Vore was the headliner and then Hod. And then you had Blasphyrion, which featured, the late Wes Weaver,
mm-hmm.
icon in Houston metal.
That's right. Rest in peace.
And Spectral Manifest opened, and now I'm playing in a band with a drummer from Spectral Manifest.
Right on.
Hasterot. So he's our drummer. So kind of a nifty show in terms of like stuff coming together. Mm-hmm. It was the first night that I took pictures with like it was when I was starting to get into photography, and I finally got a DSLR. So it was the first time I used the DSLR.
Nice.
At a show.
Yeah, that was that was kind of your thing for a while, doing the photography at the shows. Huh?
Yeah, yeah, I did it for like, I basically did it for 5 years, and then just got kind of tired of lugging the thing around.
Yeah,
and wanted to take time and just like actually watch the bands and not feel like I was half working during it.
I thought Hod was from San Antonio.
They are.
Okay.
San Antonio, they're probably split between Austin and San Antonio. I mean, TA lives in Austin, so.
Oh, okay. Right.
But at any rate, but bringing it back to Goat Whore, TA is now the bass player for Goat Whore.
Nice.
So.
I didn't know that. That's cool.
Yeah. So that's why it was a good guess.
I've
rambled for a bit.
No, that's all right.
Yeah.
And so Vore, cool. How was Vore with that night?
Oh, so they were anyway, they were fucking great. Before the show, I was talking with TA and he was like, yeah, make sure to stick around for Vore. I'm pretty picky with my death metal, these guys I really like.
Yeah.
So I did, and he was like, yeah, man, these guys are great. So I bought Gravehammer that night, and I've been listening to it ever since.
Right on.
Yeah. And we should probably say, you know, I am nowhere near as deep on death metal as I am on doom or stoner rock or psych or a variety of things. It's probably not my, I'm not going to be able to pull out like this part here is influenced by Morbid Angel, but this bit over here is Bolt Thrower and this here is Obituary. I can't do that. I'm not going to have that skill set. So if you're looking for that, sorry, it probably won't be there. It's going to be more like, this bit here is really fucking badass.
Yeah, right. Kind of the same for me. Like I'm going to try to be careful as far as like throwing out what I think stuff sounds like, because I'm the kind of in the same boat, you know, and it's like, it's sometimes it sounds ridiculous when you're like, this sounds like Hall & Oates. I don't know.
There's a lot of Hall & Oates references on this record.
Oh yeah. It's that Philly soul sound that Vore is known for.
Yes.
These guys have played with a ton of bands. I was looking on their website and they've played shows with, well, speaking of, we named a bunch of them already, Morbid Angel, Obituary, Goat Whore, of course. They played with Cattle Decapitation, Man of War, Carcass, Anvil, Levelent Creation, Cannibal Corpse, Deicide, pretty much, you know, Nile and Flames. In Flames makes sense, because that was one of the ones where I was like, should I mention them? Because it's kind of a weird, because there are, you know, as punishing and as brutal as this album is, there are some melodic moments to it.
There are some melodic moments. I don't think I would have really thought In Flames.
More at the gates, maybe, even than In Flames. But
that might make more sense. But
Not that they sound like either of those bands, but just that when they hit that kind of that melodic thing, it's like, oh, that kind of reminds me of that Gothenburg sound a little bit.
Interesting. I don't think I would have pegged Gothenburg, but that's cool.
Yeah, I mean they don't sound like those bands. It's a different type of death metal, to be clear.
No,
this is not.
It's a very, I would say, unadulterated death metal.
Yes, it's very brutal, very very precise,
but also not. There is like brutal death, which is its own thing,
right?
And I don't know that much about it, but I don't believe that's this. This is more like this. It's, I would say, like almost old school death metal, to the extent that I would know enough to pigeonhole subgenre wise into old school.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's straight ahead. They don't water it down. Not that there aren't moments it's death metal that you can headbang to.
Yeah, definitely. There's plenty of that. Of course, you have a lot of double bass drum playing, but overall, it's not the fastest tempo as, you know, like, you know, some of the bands that are just light speed, they don't play that fast.
It's not just drums are a mess of triggers. It's not that.
Yeah. There's the musicianship is very strong, and the production on this album is amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's great production. Everything's clear. Everything's crisp. You actually hear what's going on, which honestly I kind of find with extreme metal that's key. Like if you can hear what they're doing, like usually people are doing some great shit, and then every now and again it'll get lost in the sonics of it, and you can't quite tell what's going on. And that's where I get the sense that that's where I fall out on a lot of black metal, is that I just like it. The keyboards overwhelm everything, or. Mm-hmm. they've just gone for really, really bad production and I can't tell what's happening. But like you put on like Wayfarer is a great example of a band that just fucking kills. And a lot large part of that is just like, okay, this is, you can actually hear what's happening. You can hear all the cool stuff that they're doing.
Right. Yeah, one of the things about traditional death metal is that it's pretty technical, you know, but at the same time, it's not like, you know, like the musicianship in death metal. I mean, it's a style of music where you have to be able to play, you have to have your chops, you have to have, later on in death, you start to see more of kind of maybe more traditional metal elements where, you know, it's the musicianship can be a little bit looser and stuff like that. And these guys are able to groove somewhat, which you don't always get so much in the early traditional stuff, but that real technical musicianship is definitely there, but they don't over rely on it.
Yeah. I wouldn't describe it as like tech death or something. Like we're not talking about like Necrophagist or something like that, where they're going to kind of, you know, it's going to be very out there, the technical aspect of it.
Yeah. Like Origin or something.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. It's not like that. It's more primal. It's a little more raw.
Yeah.
But there is some nuanced stuff going on as well. And that makes for a pretty cool cocktail of stuff. And one thing, so if you're not familiar with death metal, or if you're not that much of, you know, into death metal, the vocals can be, death metal vocals can be off-putting for folks if you aren't there or haven't, you know, acclimated to that. Mm-hmm. But there's good death metal vocal and there's bad death metal vocal. And even with the growl, mm-hmm. some folks, it's like, it can make or break a death metal band, in my view. Like if you get the growl right, like mm-hmm. it's really cool. Mm-hmm. But if you don't get it, if there's something off about the timbre of it, mm-hmm. it's terrible.
Yeah.
And like these guys have a really great growl.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. And he mixes up some of the vocals. There's some interesting studio wizardry going on at moments, but it's always how would I describe it? Like maybe tastefully used, I guess, or they don't rely on it super heavily, but there's just such a precision and like a militaristic quality to this album and to their music in general. But it's very punishing and super heavy, very dense.
Yeah. Mechanized, but not overly so, or mechanized at times, but not overly so. Like there's bits where like the guitar is doing something pretty intricate, and then the drums will be almost lockstep with that, or it's almost in like a syncopation type situation.
Yeah.
And it works out really nicely. And like that's that type of drumming, when done right and done tastefully, can really kind of propel things. And I do think you have that there.
Yeah. A lot of really fast picking, single note licks, maybe two note chord licks with, you know, different, you know, like there's some pretty nice technique going on in there that, but it's always pretty musical.
Yeah. It's always in service to the song. Like I do feel like this is a record of songs in a way that not necessarily every death metal record is.
That's true. Yeah. It's not a grab bag of, incredibly technical parts just kind of thrown together.
Yeah. It's not, all right, well, we should probably have a bit like this. Oh, we should have a bit like that. It's not, it's much more well thought out, and it comes together as a good package. Yeah. The art and like lyrical themes, you're looking at sort of like Lovecraftian type stuff. Like there's mm-hmm. a few direct references to Lovecraft, and there's a few things that are, and my Lovecraft knowledge is not the deepest. So it may be that there's more that I'm not catching. But some stuff is not necessarily Lovecraftian, but it's a similar style. Mm-hmm. And the artwork is sort of like a how would you describe it, man?
It looks like it was probably digitally done. It's kind of like a giant armor clad, maybe like almost like a demonic warrior that has kind of like a glow of fire coming out of its chest and out of its mouth and eyes, and then it's holding this giant weapon that's almost like a spiked hammer. There's spikes all over his armor, and then in the background is
I guess
like
that would
an
be the grave hammer.
Yeah, the grave hammer, and there's like a big, like erupting volcano in the back. So it looks like this gigantic, like, you know, maybe demonic warrior of some sort.
Yeah. Yeah. And then in the booklet, you've got, so I've got the lyrics, which is helpful. And in the booklet, you've got a handful of black and white drawings that mm-hmm. are, I guess, relate to the various songs in question. So we'll kind of go through and we do the track by track and cover some of those.
Right on.
But it's pretty cool. Yeah, it's well set up. So it's nine songs, the 50, low 50s.
Yeah.
54 minutes.
52 or 4 or something. Yeah.
Somewhere in there. Yeah.
One thing I thought was interesting is that we're talking about a 3-piece here.
We are. And that is true. Like it's tricky to pull off. Yeah. It's a power trio.
Yeah. It's very powerful trio.
Yeah. You don't often get power trios in death metal, although they were not the only power trio at that show.
Right on.
As a Spectral Manifest is a power trio as well.
Oh, cool. Nice.
Yeah. It was Night of the Death Metal Power Trios.
I'd love to see how they pull it off live, because there's at moments pretty interesting multi-tracking going on with the guitar. And I mean death is obviously a huge sound, and so live I'm sure his guitar tone was just ridiculous, and so they can cover a lot of ground. But there really is some subtlety in the way that the tracks were laid out with the guitar, which I think is part of the reason why that really warrants, you know, giving the album a listen.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. So song length tends to run sort of either 4.5 to 5.5, and then you've got a few actually longer ones. You've got a few that are 7 or 8 minutes. So
yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, we'll roll through track by track. Before track by track, should probably talk a little bit about Revo.
Let's talk a little bit about Revo.
Yeah, man. Revo Guitar Straps. We've been working with them. Super cool. Guitar straps that are, not only do they look amazing, but they are far better ergonomically than anything else you're going to get mm-hmm. from a traditional leather strap. They're wood, if you have not been following along. But it, you know, which you sort of go, wood for a guitar strap, how does that work? It actually works really fucking well.
Yeah. If you think about it, yeah, I mean, it really makes sense. If when you're using a regular leather strap, it pretty much just lays all that weight on your shoulder. And it's really hard to describe to people who don't play, but if you ever play a really heavy guitar that isn't well balanced, and you've got a leather strap that just isn't quite, you know, like people just assume that a strap is just holds the guitar on you, but you know, play that thing long enough standing up and that thing it'll start to cut into your shoulder.
Especially as a bass player,
yeah.
playing fives, like
yeah.
it is uncomfortable.
It can literally get to the point where it's distracting.
Yeah. And these straps make a huge, huge, huge difference. They're really well designed. They're really well built, and no one's getting a splinter here. You know, I've gotten splinters from my guitars. I have never gotten a splinter from one of these things. And I've got like 7 straps now, I think.
Right on.
So, and I'm probably going to be ordering another one soon, because I want to get one. So I want to get one for my acoustic. And what I might actually do is the one I just got for the Jackson. Mm-hmm. I'm probably going to switch over to my acoustic, and then I'm going to put one. So they've got some limited edition ones.
Yeah.
Right now, like some limited edition designs. And the one that they've got, one it's called the Spider.
Yeah.
And the wood segments are like really small, like, and they're completely round, which most of them there aren't. Usually it's like a flatter piece. Mm-hmm. And these look really, really cool. They've got them, and they've got them like 4 colors. They've got black, mahogany, rosewood, and I think blonde.
Yeah. And okay. Yeah.
So for either the Jackson or, if it goes on my acoustic, that the black makes the most sense, but man, the rosewood looks no, I think it's the mahogany. The mahogany looks really, really cool. And I'm kind of looking for an excuse to get one. But we'll see. I'm definitely getting at least one of those. But they're going to have apparently a bunch of rare styles up on the site. So it's RevoGuitarStraps.com. We'll put that in the show notes as usual. And if you go there and you use code POD20, you'll get 20% off. So terrific deal. Yeah. And go check them out. If you don't like it, then you're dumb.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, you can use a really uncomfortable leather strap. That's fine. What you want to do.
That's fine. Yeah, but if you're gonna play a five string and then fucking put on a counterweight to stop the neck dive.
Yeah. At least treat yourself to a nice strap.
You need something that's gonna help you out a little bit for those marathon practices and shows.
Yeah, and there's a lot of people from multiple different genres and stuff that use these, and they seem to really put a lot of love into what they do. So I think they're definitely worth checking them out.
Absolutely, absolutely. And speaking of which, I was using one at the Hasselrot practice this weekend. Mm-hmm. We got and jammed. Got a new song going called Marcus Edition. So nice. That's a lot of fun. And jamming there with our drummer Kryptos from Spectral Manifest.
That's right.
Who was at the show with Vor. So bringing it back around.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, and by the way, Vor is the... it's a type of like vorophilia essentially, which is a sexual fetish based around the desire to be eaten and to eat somebody else. So there you go. It's kind of a cannibalistic, sexual context. Yeah.
Sounds pretty fucking metal.
Yeah. It's just super metal.
Excellent. Well, with all that, should we do the track by track?
Let's dig into it.
Let's dig into it. So we start off with The Cruelest Construct.
Yeah.
Really great intro for the song. I think sums up a lot of where the album goes. And big catchy intro that you've got kind of like it's almost like a jet engine sound.
Mm-hmm.
But it gets into this sort of, you get the, and then it just, really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really comes great. Right in, man. And it hits you right away.
Yeah. It pummels pretty quick.
Yeah.
And they do have next to the lyrics in this one, and it's lyrical concept, I think, is like, so the second verse, from clay and earth, a titan forged to wield apocalypse. So like some sort of creature that's going to come up and crush mankind.
It's like a golem of some sort.
Yeah, that seems reasonable. Ad noctem de profundis volare abominatus. My Latin is rusty. So is that a, well, de profundis was the name of a Vader record, I know, but.
Yeah, then there was the, that's something else. I'm thinking of something else. But anyways, yeah.
Okay.
Noctem what, night, I guess, I assume.
Tonight, profundus, I assume. But it's been forever. Man, at one point I was good at Latin.
Really?
A long time ago. Vorare, not volare. Vorare.
Yeah.
Abominatus.
Volare, another really great death metal tune. Volare. I'm an idiot.
I know. That's fine.
It's okay. We all
but
do
you're
that.
My idiot.
Yeah. Apologies. Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Carry on.
Abominatus, abomination, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got, there's a picture with this one, and it's this guy holding a staff who seems to have summoned up this large creature. And it's, I'm not sure exactly where like the head is on the creature. I see some like huge claws.
Mm-hmm.
And then it looks almost like an H.R. Geiger kind of alien head for part of it, but it might be like a multi-headed thing. It's a little mm-hmm. tough to tell exactly, but it's this dude summoning the beast, as it
nice.
Were. Yeah.
As you do.
As you do.
Cool. Let's see. So where are we on the track? So it's, I mean, it's you know, this is a this track right away is going to give you a pretty good idea of how this band works, how the album works. It's very, very well produced, very tight, very lots of chugging, very, very precise, crunchy. It's like this mix of precision, but there's, you know, more of like a, you know, again, it's never this like mathematical, you know, academic or athletic challenge to try to keep up with or something.
Yeah. There's no, you can leave your prog pocket protector at home.
Yeah, that's right.
But yeah, a very chugging verse, kind of a good solid heavy headbang along verse.
Mm-hmm. Oh, did we mention the band members?
We didn't. So you've got Paige Townsley on guitar and vocals, mm-hmm. Jeremy Parton on bass, and Remy Cameron on drums. And Paige Townsley and Jeremy Parton are still with the band. I know they've got a new drummer.
Okay. I was just going to ask.
A couple years ago. Yeah. They haven't done an album since this one. This came out in 2011. Mm-hmm. They've been around since the early 2000s, it looks like. It looks like their first record came out in like, was it like 02 or something, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, 01. Oh, wow. Lord of Storms came out in 01. And then Maleficus came out in 05. And they had this in 2011. They've had an EP and a split and some little bits here and there since, you know, other than that. But basically three full lengths over sort of a 10-year period. They are still around and they are still doing stuff. But they have, you know, they haven't done another record since this one.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure, like, you know, like so many musicians, they have lives outside of the music. As much as these guys have toured, you know, it's not like they're raking in the cash. So. As any touring musician will tell you.
Yeah, life as a touring musician is difficult.
Yeah.
At the best of times, and yeah. It's not been the best of times. So.
Yeah, I know, really. One thing I like that I really like about the drummer is the way he uses his cymbals. He's got a really good ear for the fact that, you know, the cymbals don't have to just be something that you smash that makes a lot of noise. There can also be some differences between the cymbal sounds.
Yeah. And you've got a good differentiation of tempos here. You've got some like really fast stuff. You've got some very slow, almost kind of sludgy. And Arkansas has got a great, you know, a great history in sludge.
Oh, for sure.
You know, R-Wake and there's so many bands out of there that, you know, we're influenced by R-Wake, mm-hmm. and
I saw them. They were great.
Yeah. Paul Bearer, of course. So that kind of all fits. And I think these guys have played with, I feel like I saw something where they had played with Paul Bearer, or they had played with like another, like these guys have done their time, I think, also playing with some doom and sludge bands. So
yeah, that is cool. Cause sometimes, as metal fans know, that, you know, some metal fans can be pretty fractioned, but and I would imagine in a place like Fayetteville, you know, there people might actually kind of, you know, that's something that ties you together, is your love of the music. So, you know, it's just that sometimes people will embrace, you know, the different styles and stuff, and I would assume that might be what's going on there.
Yeah, I think so. One thing I love in this track is like there's a riff, you get it earlier on the song, you get it later on the song, but it's this like chugging chum 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 chum. And then when like the actually I was talking about it in the intro already, but the fast bit that comes with it, the tremolo picked it's just kind of a cool I just like the fucking riff, man. I don't have anything smarter to say about it, but
great riffs throughout the album for sure. And then there's
it's a big bag of riffs.
Yeah. And then there's certain riffs that are just, you know, like sublime on this album. This is a band that really needs a greatest thing you've never heard treatment, because they really deserve a bigger audience.
Yeah, I agree. That's perhaps why I selected them.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Makes sense. I mean, it just kind of goes with the territory, right? They are on
hashtag Humble Ben.
That's right.
Hashtag Humble Ben.
They are on the German label AFM now.
Are they, or is it just like a compilation that was?
It's on their website. It says that they're.
Is it really? Okay. Yeah. You went to the you went to their actual website.
That's right. I mean, you know how bands can be with websites. I'm not sure, but you know, it says here. Well, at least what they did is they put some reviews, album reviews, and there's a review for Gravehammer from Zero Tolerance, and it says finally they've been rewarded with a deal from AFM.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Okay. Very cool.
I think on the about page it also mentions that they're there, that they're with AFM, which is cool because they're in some pretty good company there.
Right on. All right.
I mean, it's well deserved. I mean, Jesus, you know, a band this professional and this musically accomplished really deserves, you know, a chance to be heard, especially in Europe where, you know, they probably eat this stuff up.
Yeah, I imagine they would go over very well in Europe.
I imagine if they toured there, that would be a riot for those guys.
Yeah. Yeah. Not sure if we, so I put out the interview request, but I put out the interview request literally 2 minutes before we got on the microphone. Mm-hmm. So I don't know yet if we'll, get a chance to talk to them, but hopefully.
Yeah.
And, we'll get all the gory details.
That's right.
Yeah. Should we go on to The Unseen Hand?
Let's do it.
All right. I like this one a lot, man. This is one of my, couple of favorites, I think.
Me too. Got a great like intro that just signals that you're about to get pounded. Whole album's like that, but yeah. And like I had mentioned before, you know, the riffs are great throughout, but then there's just certain moments that are really choice. And this is definitely one of them, is the beginning of this song. It's just the way it's like, it announces itself musically, you know?
Yeah. You've got like right before the verse comes in, like the guitars sort of hold and kind of drag out and decay a chord while the drums do this really cool fill up into the verse.
Yeah, it's amazing what they can do with three people.
Three dudes, yeah.
It's cool because there's ideas in there, guitar ideas that you know just sound like the kind of thing that would be thought out by a couple different guitar players. So his ability to kind of play with himself, so to speak. Sorry for that one, but you know, musically speaking, really works. I mean, he you know, his interplay with the different guitar ideas kind of speaking to each other does a really great job with that.
He does. I like during the verse, you've got, it's almost kind of like a syncopation between the drums and the guitar.
Yeah.
The way they attack the riff, is that the right terminology, or the way they kind of go with the riff, I think really adds to the whole impression of the song.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's funny because, you know, sometimes you listen to particularly maybe some of the death bands that have been around for a really long time, and they, you know, maybe some of them go through that kind of stale phase where, you know, if you had never heard them before or you'd never heard death metal, you would immediately think of it as very aggressive and very active music. But for somebody as a fan, you can sometimes tell when a band is going through a phase where they're just kind of phoning it in, you know, and you're not getting any of that on this.
No, not at all.
I mean, it's just, you know, the performances are ridiculous.
Yeah.
Unrelenting is a word that I thought of quite a bit when listening to this. And I was a little bit slightly vindicated when I saw their about page on their website where they refer to their sound as unrelenting.
Well, there you go.
I mean, it is unrelenting. It really is. It's just bashing you, you know, like going from part to part and never really letting up.
Yeah. One part on this that I like, you've got, you've had the heavy riff going in, and then it's about 1 minute and 50 seconds in, the drums cut out, and I think everything but the guitar cuts out, and it's just sort of this jump, 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 mm-hmm. jump. And then they do like a little, like a fill, and then just everything cuts, and then it comes back in with this fucking brutal, higher pitched than his usual growl, I think almost like a almost black metal sort of.
Almost black, yeah.
Yeah. Scream. And it's just like, it's just this fucking great moment.
Yeah. They kind of utilize that alternate, kind of more of a screamy style on a couple moments, but it's always just kind of a choice thing.
I wonder if it's the bass player doing that. It might be.
It could be. I want to say I had read somewhere that they might have even had someone else do it. I can't remember. Maybe. I could be wrong, though.
I haven't heard that, but.
No, and I could be talking out of my ass, which, you know, to be fair, I'm pretty good at that.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not seeing that in the in the booklet. So, and actually, I'm not seeing anybody else besides Paige Townsley credited with vocals. So it may be all him.
There you go. Yeah.
Yeah. You get a pretty nice guitar solo in this one. So they use the solos pretty judiciously on here. It's not just solos for the sake of solos. You don't get one in every song.
That's true.
It's not a given that you're going to have one, which is nice. It keeps the listener guessing a little bit, which is nice.
Yeah. And it can set them apart from different death bands because, you know, I mean, a lot of the death guitar players are known for their leads. You know, like Schuldinger or however the hell you say his name. I've never been able to pronounce properly.
Schuldinger.
Thank you so much.
I don't know if that's actually the right way to say his name.
It sounds better than the way I said it. I'm going to go with that. But his, obviously, I mean, you know, in death evolved quite a, the band itself evolved quite a bit over their career. But his leads are, you know, a unique thing. Same with Trey from Morbid Angel. I mean, I mean, certain death bands, you know, there are known for their leads. And these guys are, I think you would have to say they would be known more for like their rhythm technique and just the density of the riffing.
Yeah. But you do get a good solo on this. And it's not really sweep picking that he's doing, I don't think, but it's kind of almost like it's like solo via arpeggio.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he uses arpeggios well, and he does some interesting sweep picking techniques throughout the album, but not throughout, as in, you know, on some of the different points where he actually takes a like true solo, because he also has a tendency to use some leads, just kind of a lead tone over parts, almost as a textural element, and less, you know, as a like a solo type performance thing, you know?
Yeah. But you get that sort of arpeggiated bit, the first half of it. And then you get a more traditional solo, on the second half where it's, he's just doing different runs.
Mm-hmm.
It's really nice. I like this. I liked it a lot as a lead. I think it works really well in the song, and everything kind of, the song's put together well, you know, around that as well. All right. Should we go on to Doomhore?
Let's move on to Doomhore.
One of the longer tracks on here, almost 8 minutes.
Yeah. Great intro.
Yeah. It's a cool, does it start with the bass bit, or does it, no, you get the chords first, these heavy chords. And then you'll have the bass kind of droning underneath, dum, 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 dum. Mm-hmm. And then just like the it's a lower and sort of more guttural than his usual growl, almost like the sort of sub demon coming up from the bowels of the earth.
Mm-hmm. About to get attacked by the demon army.
Yeah, and just intoning,
it's so cool.
Yeah, you get that at both the beginning and the end of the track.
Yeah, this is a really epic track for sure.
Yeah, you go through. I feel like just like three or four riffs by the time you're a minute and a half in. Mm-hmm. Like it goes from there and it builds into a more mid-tempo riff,
mm-hmm.
and then like the verse riff is like super fast, like one of the fastest on the record.
Yeah,
but it's a really great riff. Like it's one of those riffs like. Having now listened to the record a bunch, I feel like I've heard it before or in another context, or like, I don't know if it's just that, if it's just my own acclimation, like,
is that the lick that goes, nah, 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 nah. It's something like that.
Yeah.
What does it remind me of? I think I had the exact same response to this, that it reminded me of something else.
Okay. Yeah.
Had a similar sound. I wonder what I can't remember because I couldn't place it at the time because, you know, my ears were full of Vore. So I was like, I know this reminds me of something else.
Yeah. The verse itself kind of reminds me a little bit of Vehemence.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorite death metal bands. And at some point, we may well do a Vehemence episode.
Right on.
But yeah, it reminds me of them a little bit. There's a few moments on here that remind me a little bit of Vehemence, and I don't know if that's a direct thing or more likely, I think, just common influence.
Yeah. I mean, that's the impression that I got, that there's moments on here that are reminiscent of other things. There's outros on a couple of the songs that are very similar to the kind of the sound and the techniques being used at the end of a couple of the Pantera songs. Do I think they did that on purpose to try to sound like Pantera? Fuck no, I don't. But
no,
it does kind of have that, you know, if you're familiar with that stuff, it's a decent reference point, even though that's not what's going on here.
Right. Right.
And I think that kind of is the same for, you know, like there's a false harm. They don't use a lot of false harmonics on this album, but, there's a few points where, you know, Page will use them, but there's at one point in particular where he uses one that sounds exactly like the kind of false harmonics that Gojira uses like 8 million times in every song.
But was Gojira even doing stuff at this point?
In 2012,
I think they probably were, but like they weren't.
They certainly weren't as
well known as they are.
No. I saw them around that time, I think.
Okay.
Actually, I think I saw them with In Flames, oddly enough.
Yeah. This one's got a really fun midsection.
Mm-hmm.
It's got like a good heavy chugging riff that's like, it's mm-hmm. got like a good kind of headbang hook to it, like a musical hook. And, yeah, it expands nicely. And then like at a certain point it kind of builds up and then it drops into just this like nice drum fill and then comes back. It's a really cool way to construct a riff. And like this is a fairly epic song for the record.
Yeah.
It's got a lot of parts in it, but it feels very well put together. Like it's not a slog.
No, not at all.
And then you've got probably the best solo on the album, I think.
Yeah, I think that's probably true.
Almost neoclassical,
mm-hmm.
in the first half of it.
Yeah, and he is using sweep picking and arpeggios here.
There, I think, yeah, we've got that. Yeah, it gets into the sweep picking a little bit.
I mean, we're not talking like, you know, like Joe Satriani style.
He's not going Yngwie on it, but he's ripping it up, man.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
You get that kind of black metal vocal line comes. It's just like for one line.
Yeah. Basically. You do have a little bit of that earlier on before it would be pre-solo, I guess we're like 3.5 minutes or so in, give or take.
Mm-hmm. And then they bring it back again after the solo when the verse.
Do they? Okay.
Mm-hmm. And then,
You end the way you began.
Yeah. It's now the Doom outro. Doom, Doom, which makes me think of Thulsa Doom from Conan.
Excellent. Yeah. It's a good song. I do feel also kind of that the record divides itself neatly into three sections, and this is the end of section one.
Okay. That makes sense. Section one is punishingly heavy.
Yeah. Wow.
The whole album is. I mean, let's get real, but yeah.
Well, also like lengthwise, you could really have it be, it would do very well as three sides of a 2 LP.
Mm-hmm.
And this would be your side one pretty neatly. And then side two would be the next three tracks. And the last three tracks would be side three. And then really what you need on side four is a picture disc with the album cover.
That's right.
I would purchase that 2 LP.
There you go.
If anyone is listening, AFM or otherwise.
You got one sold right there.
There we go. Yeah. And that kind of leads us into, so how is it supposed to be pronounced?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I pronounce it Ouroboros.
Because I've heard Ouroboros and I've seen different spellings. It's always a different spelling. And like, I feel like people pronounce it differently.
Yeah. I have no idea I assume there is a proper one, but I don't know what it is.
Yeah, the Ouroboros, the serpent eating its tail.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the name here. But this track four, it's an interlude. Kind of reminds me a little bit of like an Opeth acoustic passage.
Yeah, it's cool. It's almost flirting with being atonal, but it isn't. But I mean, it's not atonal, but it kind of has this, I don't know, it's a pretty unique acoustic style that he has. He's really good at it, actually.
Yeah. It seems pretty Akerfeldian to me.
Yeah, that's a great reference. I hadn't thought of that, but now that you mention it, that actually makes sense.
Like something you would have had off of, like, especially one of the earlier records.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly nothing past Still Life.
Still Life, yeah.
Yeah, Still Life or earlier.
Yeah, that makes sense when they were kind of still mixing in some of the gothy elements and stuff.
Yeah.
Not necessarily when they played parts like this, but this is almost medieval sounding at times, like particularly near the end of it.
Yeah. You could have gotten something like that on Orchid maybe or Morning Rise. Yeah.
It sounds like he's using a classical guitar as well. I don't think like the nylon strings.
I think so.
Yeah,
I think so.
Which is a great choice because they just sound so good.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. It's a great little interlude. Lets everyone catch their breath.
Yeah.
And then
it's a good one. I mean, it's, you know, I mean, everybody has their opinions of interludes, you know, some are better than others. And this definitely ranks up there as an effective one, I think.
I agree.
As we say, a palate cleanser.
Yeah. And you move from there into the title track.
Yeah. The title track, the mighty Gravehammer.
Yeah, you get really kind of a couple of big epic tracks back to back here.
Yeah. Yeah, they don't skimp on the epics.
No. So yeah, the title track starts off with kind of a little atmospheric bit for the first 40 seconds before bringing in some good slow heavy chords.
Yeah, it almost sounds like kind of like monks chanting, except I believe it's a synthesizer. It's got this like sound to it that's really cool.
Yeah.
So that's a great mood to get the song going.
And then you get like some kind of slow heavy chords until it gets into like the main riff. And the main riff is really good. It's this kind of like you got staccato section to it, and then you've got like a really fast, almost black metal-ish section to it.
Mm-hmm.
It works those two halves of it work together really nicely.
Yeah.
Almost reminds me of the riff from the first track a little bit.
Yeah, it is kind of a callback to that. Well, sort of, but yeah, it reminded me of it as well. That's true. Yeah. Which I liked. I liked how it kind of ties those parts together.
Yeah. During the verse, he lets the guitar kind of cut out, and he'll do the vocal basically over just the drums.
Mm-hmm.
And then he'll bring the guitar back either for accents or in between the vocal lines.
Yeah. Yeah. This is another one of the, at points, very militaristic kind of, you know, it's like battle, like war death or something.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, lyrically, you know, the first two lines of the song, wielder of death, Gravehammer rending flesh, sums it up pretty well.
It would work equally as well as High on Fire lyrics.
Yes, it would.
Gravehammer.
Yeah, well, they had the one song Frosthammer.
Right, I know. I mean, you know, similar ground being tread, and that would be an interesting battle between those two armies. The High on Fire, the scrappy, you know, and then the highly mechanized and well armed Vor army. I'd watch that battle. Yeah. Yes, I'm a dork, by the way.
Well, I know.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's definitely a high point on the album for me. It's not my favorite song that's coming up, but it's definitely one of the strong points.
Absolutely. You do get another lead in this, which the first half of it's like a lot of kind of sustained notes. He's got like self-harmonized.
Mm-hmm.
in a way that it's almost like he's got like a pedal doing it or something. Like, I'm not sure if it's double tracked or if it's a pedal.
Yeah, there's I don't see my note on that, so I guess it's not here. But there are some moments on some of the songs where they there's some interesting like production ideas going on with strange sounds, like strange guitar sounds or what. And it's hard for me to pinpoint exactly what's going on that's causing it. You know, if it's a heavily affected guitar, sometimes I can't tell if it's a synth or whatever. But again, it's real judicious though. They don't, you know, it's not like a token. I mean, like the album would be great without it kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. The second half of the solo is a cool, it's like these descending lines that are, they're slightly atonal, I think. Mm-hmm. And, chromatic.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of feels like it's coming unglued a little bit in a yeah. cool way.
Yeah, there's an element of the kind of like the Kerry King or the, you know, the Jeff Hanneman style of soloing where it's
I could see that being a little Kerry King. Yeah.
Kind of that melange of notes, you know, but not quite as frantic or, you know, maniacal sounding as those guys, but kind of reminiscent of that. Kind of gives you an idea what kind of ballpark would, you know, some that the style that he occasionally uses with his leads.
Yeah. That fits.
I mean, unlike them, he will go melodic. He's not afraid to use melody in his particularly in some of the lead stuff that he does, as opposed to just like solos. I mean, that I always kind of use the term lead to differentiate where it's like he's playing high notes, he's playing, you know, on strings, you know, solely on strings that are generally used for solos, but he's not really soloing. It's more just adding a texture or, you know, another layer, which is cool because I mean, you know, music is so huge. It's interesting that they went to the trouble to add those layers on there when, you know, a million other bands would never even bother.
Yeah. I think that's true.
They really have a unique sound. I mean, even though, you know,
it does stand out. Like it's death metal and you kind of go, all right, well, it's death metal, but like it does stand out.
Yeah, it's one of those bands. If you had heard them enough, and then you heard them, you would know immediately. It's like, oh, that's that Vor sound, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Should we move along?
Yeah.
I get the sense this might be your favorite, and it's kind of mine as well.
I love this song so much.
it's the claw is the law.
That's amazing.
And it's good. I feel perhaps it's just a little bit of a wink.
Mm-hmm.
I think.
Yeah.
It's
a bit of a nudge.
It's the kind of over the top fun that, you know. It's over the top. Everybody knows it's over the top. No one's you know. No.
Yeah, I can guarantee it's a crowd pleaser.
Yeah. I like, this is the one that I remember. Like, I remember this one, them playing this one live and being like, yeah, I need to get this record. And like, yeah. Which is the one that has the claws? That's this one. Okay. That's the one I'm getting.
The claw is the law.
So good.
Oh yeah, man. The chorus, like it's the biggest hook, vocal hook on the record.
The claw is the law.
It's pretty much up there with some of the finer moments of any metal band. It's a great chorus.
Yeah. Yeah. It kind of doesn't matter what the rest of the lyrics are after that point. It's just like, all right, yeah, this is about someone who's going to beat the shit out of somebody with a giant metal claw.
The claw is the law. That's
fantastic. I assume.
Well, it's probably, yeah, it's probably not friendly, whatever it is.
Yeah, no one, the claw is the law, and it's a just judicious body.
Correct. Meeting out justice.
Meeting out justice, you know, by a preponderance of the evidence.
Yeah, that's right. If it pleases the court, I would like to present this claw.
This claw.
Which, as one knows, is the law.
Is the law. Yeah.
It was great because I was, when I, well, the first time I heard it, I had my I was looking at the track listing when this song was playing, and I had the wrong song lined up, and I'm like, what the hell is he saying? It sounds like he's saying the claw. And then I went, wait a minute. And then I look up and I'm like, oh, the claw is the law. Fantastic. kudos to Vor for, because this song is fucking balls.
Yeah. 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 A brief sort of, you know, intro. And then when it breaks into the main riff, it's, yeah, it's a fun riff, man. Like, it's a fun, fast death metal riff.
And it's something that no other genre does. Like,
yeah,
this is one of the things that heavy metal, you know, does so well, and nothing else really is able to do this. It's so great.
I also feel like the bass is more present in the mix on this track than it is on some of the rest of the record.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a couple points where the bass actually comes through. If there's anything that I would have to, you know, that's one thing that I wish I could hear a little bit more in this album is the bass being more pronounced.
It may be that on a lot of it, he uses a like distortion on the bass, and sometimes that can kind of hide it with the guitar a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
As I've been discovering doing that with Hasarat. So maybe that's it here. Whereas like the bass that you hear here, it does feel like it's a clean tone.
Yeah. It the bass really, it just adds to the heft of everything. It's something probably that you're going to feel more than here generally on the album.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that was if I would change anything, if I was the guy producing, when nobody asked me, because why God's name would they? But just in fantasy world, you know, that would be the one thing I would do is put that bass up in there more, because it's just, you know, I mean, it just cries for it.
Yeah, here, like when you get it here, it really fucking slaps.
Yeah. Yeah. And then there's I was thinking it was this track, but I don't believe it's this one. There's one of the tracks where the bass tone sounds almost like a synthesizer. It's like this weird, like subsonic drone almost that's buried underneath. And I was like, wow, that's really cool. They need to do more of that.
Oh, weird. I don't think I noticed that.
I can't remember where it is. I don't think it's on the Claws of the Law. I made a note. I don't think it's on there, but the Claws of the Law also has the cool thing where when the verse kicks in, the pitch of the riff goes down. So I can't remember if it's a full step or a half step, but they play this cool riff, and then right when the vocal comes in, it goes down a step, and it just sounds so cool the way they downshift into that lower tone.
Yeah. Yeah, they do. They do that in a couple places where it's not just in this song, but where it's like something kind of shifts just a little bit. Like you get a little bit of a key change as the vocal comes in. The verses on this have just a lot of swagger to them,
mm-hmm.
for lack of a better term.
Yeah. Yeah. For, I think one of the biggest criticisms that people that, you know, from people who don't like death metal or who can't really, it's maybe not that they don't like it, but that they just don't know how to approach it, is that it can sound impenetrable. You know, I obviously a lot of people just don't like the growling vocal style, but the density and the, you know, just the overwhelming intensity can be, you know, puts some people off. But there's a, for people that are fans of hard rock and traditional heavy metal, there's enough influence from that kind of stuff in this without it ever really veering from death that gives it an interesting quality that you don't always get with some of the other death bands, which I think would, you know, people might appreciate from them that might not appreciate some of the other death stuff. And when I say, I mean, it's hard to just say death as if that describes one thing, because there's so many different variations in that world.
Yeah.
And like you, I'm not, you know, I am by no means an authority on death metal. You know, I like a lot of it and I've heard a ton of it, but I, you know, if you're looking for somebody to be the source of how death works and what, you know, all the ins and outs, I'm not your guy.
No. And neither am I. At some point, we'll probably have to do something where we get like a guest lecturer for death metal.
That'd be really cool.
Who can kind of go through that a little bit better, because like, Yeah, I for as much as I've listened to it to a solid amount over the years, but nowhere near, you know, the what I've listened to with doom and stuff like that. So
I do enjoy death metal quite a bit. It's the stuff that I like a lot.
Yeah.
And what I mean by that is I don't know enough, you know, to say. I'm sure there's tons of death metal out there that I would love. I just don't know it.
Yeah.
I'm not familiar with it yet, you know.
The one cool bit in here, kind of a bridge about, I guess, about four and three quarter minutes in, is they break everything down. And you've got kind of it was one of the lighter guitar tempos that you have on the record. It's sort of this mm-hmm. sort of pensive, kind of bit.
Yeah, that's a really cool part. I like that part a lot.
Yeah, and you've got kind of the ominous growls in the background, and then he gets kind of like he builds up towards a lead over it. It almost sounds like he's using like an Ebow or something like that. Like it's mm-hmm. it's kind of an interesting tone. Like it's not a full out lead. Mm-hmm. It's just kind of like a high bit given a different melody to it.
Yeah, I like that a lot. This song also has the one of the most ridiculously fast snare rolls I've ever heard. It's just like, whoa, okay. That's phenomenal.
Just yeah,
brrr, sounds like a machine gun. It's great.
You get, yeah, to go back into that kind of quiet, but you get like these, like the vocals go like full on demonic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's this really cool atmosphere, and it gives you more of what's the best way to describe it? It gives more of a it's more dynamic than you get in a lot of death metal.
Mm-hmm.
So that way, when it comes back in and hits you with the chorus again, it hits that much harder.
Yeah, it's full force. That's true, because a lot of death stuff can be pretty, what's the word? Like, it's the same. It's basically full speed ahead all the time.
Yeah, you don't get a ton of variation typically.
Which is fine. I mean, sometimes that works really well. It's just that these guys do it differently.
Yeah. Yeah. You get the chorus again before the end. Man, it's a really great song. Like it's the one that stood out to the most to me.
Yeah.
And the reason I got the record, and really probably in a lot of ways, the reason that we're talking about it.
Yeah. Well, that's yeah. I can see why. It's great. I love it.
Yeah. And that's a good cap to the second third of the record.
Right. Okay. Yeah. That makes sense when you break it down like that. It does work in those thirds.
Yeah. And so you get to what would I guess be side three,
mm-hmm.
Starting off with Progeny of the Leviathans.
Mm-hmm.
So about 5.5 minutes. Claws of the Law was the last of like the really long epics. That one was like almost 8.5 minutes.
Yeah, that's right. It's
really a good doom song length, to be honest.
Yeah, yeah, true.
And but yeah, we're back to sort of 5.5 minutes on Progeny of the Leviathans. And it's another good, man, just hard hitting. You get kind of a blast beat in the early sections there,
mm-hmm.
which you don't get a ton of straight up blast beats on the record. Which is fine. I'm not a massive blast beat fan. Like deployed here and there, it works well, but like too much is too much with that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think these guys do it really, really well here.
Yeah, I agree. There's times on this album where they it's like they don't quite do it, but they almost start to remind me of Nile. So of course it reminds me of Nile, but there's some of the tones, some of the really like intensely distorted, almost buzzsaw kind of guitar tones that that Carl gets in Nile. It reminds me of that sometimes. And some of the parts where Page will hold a guitar chord, you know, like there'll be like a da-na-na-na, and then the drums and the bass are kind of pounding in the background, like as a counterpoint, which is something that Nile likes to do a lot. Of course, Nile is, you know, extremely epic. But yeah, it's funny. It's like, it reminds me of them, but it doesn't remind me of them. If that makes any sense.
A little bit.
Yeah. It doesn't really make much sense, but I was like, there were parts where I would think, you know, that kind of reminds me of Nile. But then when I would pick it apart, I'd realize that it does kind of remind me, but it's also very different.
Yeah. Nile. I like Nile. The later records I like more than the earlier ones. The earlier mm-hmm. ones, like the keyboard type stuff that you get in there, and like sometimes yeah. just like that's a band that really I feel like you need super crisp production, because mm-hmm. What they're doing is really fast and really technical and really yeah. cool. But if you don't get the production on it just right, it kind of turns to mud very quickly. Like the second death metal record, the first death metal I ever bought was Chaos Fear, mm-hmm. Meshuggah, mm-hmm. and I did not like it. Yeah. I was 16. I had never heard anything quite like that, but like I've been reading in like all the guitar magazines, they were all gushing over this record, and I thought, well, let me give this a go. This sounds like it's going to be really cool, and I put it on, and I just couldn't. I was not prepared.
That's a tough inroad.
It sounded like it started mid riff.
Yeah.
And then it sort of then seemed to keep going nonstop for 45 minutes and then end mid riff again, just in the middle of like, what was that?
Yeah.
And I just couldn't do it. I was ready. And then the second one I got was Black Seeds of Vengeance mm-hmm. by Nile. And mm-hmm. I remember, you know, I got it and I've been reading all this stuff about like, all these Egyptian elements and this and that. And I thought, all right, well, I'm going to be there. It sounds like there's enough interesting stuff in here. Like it's going to, you know, and I just couldn't, it didn't work.
Yeah.
I wasn't. And I tried a number of Nile records like off and on over the years after that. And like, it was a long time before any of them really clicked for me.
Yeah.
And it was later records where like, okay, the production's gotten better. I can hear a bit more what's actually going on. And now mm-hmm. I can hear the cool shit they're doing. And that was mm-hmm. the difference. Yeah. I've never seen them live, but I think if I did, it would make a lot of sense. It's because you need to see it and hear what's going on better to really appreciate it.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I've never seen them live either. I've always kind of wanted to, but a couple of their albums have really, you know, really hit pretty hard for me. And I also like, and I don't know how well it was received, but I like the Carl Sanders solo album where he's doing a bunch of all the weird like instrumentation and the kind of really like really going into his Egyptology fascination.
Nice.
Yeah, it's some pretty cool stuff. It's all instrumental and not metal at all. It's really an interesting record.
Interesting. I should probably check that out. I haven't heard it. I should.
It's a lot of fun. Yeah.
You know, the drummer did a solo record where he had like a – and like Rusty Cooley was one of the people who did a solo for him,
huh.
I think.
Yeah. What's his name? George?
George Callis, maybe?
Yeah. Yeah, that guy's a machine.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, the first – it took until Blackwater Park, which I got not that long after Black Seeds of Vengeance, before I was able to – and it was the fact that Opeth had – all those parts that weren't death metal in there that let me acclimate. And they're like, even if there's like a kind of a death metal part, like maybe the vocal won't be or something, or if he's going to do the growl, he's got, you know, there's this or that or the other thing going on. And like,
yeah,
it let me just kind of acclimate to what was happening. And so I could appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
That's funny. I always think of them as a Florida band, but they're not. They're from South Carolina.
Nile, yeah, they're that's right, into South Carolina.
Where were all right,
we were talking about
Progeny of the Leviathans.
Progeny of the Leviathans, which my notes have has incorrectly autocorrected to Progeny of the Lions.
Progeny of the Apocalypse. Oh, wait a minute, that makes me immediately think of that song, the Dimmu Borgir song.
I don't know. I never really listened much to Dimmu Borgir.
Me either, but it's a cartoonishly hilarious song. It's just the title reminds me of.
All right.
But yeah, the drummer does a lot of that really cool kind of cymbal work. He's got some interesting sounding cymbals, that some crashes that, and some splashes that have some pretty cool sounds. And he's really good at discerning and not overusing them either.
Yeah. This one's got kind of a cool bridge. There's kind of like a revolving guitar part. Maybe revolving is not the right term, but it's this kind of...
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like kind of like a pattern of sort, like some sort of pattern.
Yeah, it gives a cool effect, and it's a nice... Like it adds some dynamic to it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the last few songs, a couple of them anyway, I think this one and I guess probably
Thrown to the Wolves.
Yeah, Thrown to the Wolves. I think that they're about as standard Vore-ish kind of sound as you get. Like they,
yeah,
you know, they're kind of the straightforward Vore sound, I think.
Yeah, you do get a solo in Prodigy of the Leviathans.
But again, yeah, not like a 10-minute,
not overdone. Yeah,
yeah, lead workout. This is a very rhythm oriented album. I mean, it's death metal. That makes sense. But you know, very a lot of chugging, a lot of very driving, but a lot of mid tempo songs, which is cool. It's not a light speed album.
No, not at all. Yeah, it's a good solid tune. It's a good solid tune.
Yeah, I like this track.
Should we go on to Thrown to the Wolves?
Yeah,
which it's kind of a little like Death Angel's got a song called Thrown to the Wolves, THROWN. This is thrown as in sitting on the throne.
Mm-hmm.
And the little in the booklet, you've got one of those drawings for it, and it's this dude sitting on kind of a throne, and he's got like wearing a severed wolf's head.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. I like this one. I actually like this one quite a bit. This is, I'd say, one of my top two or three.
Yeah. Right on.
Yeah.
It's got more. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like I had mentioned, I mean, it's kind of, you know, it kind of goes together with the Progeny of the Leviathans. I think that they both kind of carve out a kind of a similar stylistic idea, I guess.
Yeah.
Like as straightforward as you get with Vore, as far as kind of the you know, all speed, full speed ahead. It doesn't, you know, they don't do, it's not the epic, kind of the epic thing that they do on a couple of the other tracks like Gravehammer or Claws of the Law. It's more of the kind of the one that where they just bash it out.
Yeah.
But always being, you know, always being Vore, always being pretty precise and you know, well composed.
This one seems a little bit more raw than Progeny of the Leviathans. Like it's
that's true.
It's not as technical, I would say.
Yeah. Yeah.
But to good effect.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
You get kind of an interesting sort of doubled vocal. Like he's got the more guttural vocal at parts, and then at parts of it, it's kind of a but it's paired with like a higher. Which is part of what makes me think it might be the bass player doing the higher vocal. Mm-hmm. You've got them kind of next to each other there, and it does sound like it could be two different dudes doing those parts. It's tough to get both the low and then the more black metal kind of banshee sound.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, because I mean they really are different. I mean that's you're doing two different things pretty much. Yeah. I think Jeremy, the bass player, I think he is credited as doing some vocals on the album, if I remember correctly.
Oh, maybe online, not the booklet. He's not on the booklet.
Okay.
But
yeah. Well, you know, I mean, but you know how the internet is. I mean, it could be completely wrong.
That's true.
I would trust the booklet obviously over the internet.
Yeah. And I think, by the way, I don't think we mentioned, I think this one, at least originally may have been self-released.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. On,
Frozen Solid.
Frozen Solid. Thank you.
Yeah. But I think it may be their sort of house label.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Kind of cool. Our second self-release.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Colin Davis, I think is the name of the guy that mixed it. I forget what, I had read some of the projects that he'd done. But I think he did a great job. The production on the album is really great.
Doug Norton.
Oh, is it Doug Norton? Okay.
Yep. That's what I'm getting here.
Okay, right on. See, yeah. Internet.
Useless, sir. Useless.
I know.
Yeah. Should we go on to Sacerdotum Tyrannus?
Yes.
Last track on the record.
Sacerdotum Tyrannus, which the best I could find would be like, what, Priest Tyrants?
Makes,
Tyrant Priests makes sense. Or something? Yeah.
That tracks. Yep, concocting the will of the divine, conceived from mortal minds distorted. God against God, their scourge descends, mm-hmm. inflicting madness upon the uncleansed. Yeah.
Nice.
Sounds about right.
Gotta love it. Yeah, what did I make? What's one of the notes I made on the...
Sorry?
Something about the lyrics? Oh, yeah, just very, very anti-church and anti, you know, I mean, like that definitely comes through in this one.
Yeah. Yeah, to be sure. It's a good, like, it starts off kind of that kind of like aggressive staccato riff that.
Yeah, this one comes right in. Not much of an intro, really.
Yeah.
Or at least not much of, like, you know, intro in the sense that, you know, sometimes they'll have a part, like kind of a part scripted specifically as an intro, whereas this one pretty much just goes right in.
Yeah.
Good overdubs, great tracking. Super yeah. tight as always.
Yeah. Kind of an interesting, like a sort of so we got a solo here, and the bit underneath it, you've got this kind of super fast rhythm going.
Mm-hmm.
And the lead's pretty fast as well.
Yeah, there's a lot of
it's a good one. It's a yeah, like a longer lead too.
It's a scorcher. There's a lot. They do this a lot where it's like, you know, the double bass drum rolling pretty very fast and very steady, and then over that, like a single, you know, single, it might be overdubbed with something like a lower note and then a higher note, and they're kind of layered over each other to create this real dense, you know, just like really fast. It's cool. I like when they do that. I mean, it's a common thing, but they do it really well.
Yeah, it's a good effect. Mm-hmm. And that, yeah, and that closes it.
Yeah, it's a good listen. It's a fun record.
Yeah, it's a good one, man. If you like the death metal, it's a little bit off the beaten path.
Yeah,
you know, if you haven't been able to catch these guys, but it's one worth checking out. Like, you know, TA's never steered me wrong.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hats off.
Yeah, absolutely. So very cool. I kind of discovered him by chance. I was there at that show for a different band. And if I hadn't been at that show, I don't know that I would have necessarily found him otherwise. Mm-hmm. I'm very glad I did.
Right on. Yeah. Hopefully we get to talk to them. I'd love to kind of pick their brain, because this is a band that I didn't know about. And it's always fun to learn about bands that are, you know, from the same region.
Yeah.
Metal is very, there's a very dedicated and loving audience for metal here in this part of the country. And, as I'm sure are, you know, in other parts, but it's just a unique kind of audience. And Fayetteville, Arkansas, man, you gotta be a lifer to be playing your metal there, man. So I'd be excited to hear from these guys and see what they have to say, hopefully.
Absolutely. Absolutely. In the meantime, check out the record, Gravehammer, and check out I actually have not heard the first two.
Right on.
Slightly embarrassed to say I haven't heard the first two, Lord of Storms and Maleficus. I need to go get those. Mm-hmm. But definitely check out Gravehammer. It might be the greatest thing you've never heard.
It just might.
It just might.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, check it out.
Yeah,
check it out.
Check it out.
Check out Revo Guitar Straps.
Revo Guitar Straps, RevoGuitarStraps.com. Use code POD20, all one word, with 20 being numbers, not letters.
Yeah.
As I over-explain it.
Well, you know, it's every little bit helps.
Every little bit helps. We'll have a link in the show notes. And yeah. Cheers, everybody.
Cheers.